There is a document that people sign before they're married, and that I strongly encourage people to sign before they're married, called a halachic prenuptial agreement. I wanted to discuss, since we're learning it in this year, basic background to the idea of the halachic prenup. There was a problem that people discovered in recent decades where husbands were refusing to give their wives a get. It used to be a classic case of an aguna, was a case where a husband went off to war and he never came back, or he went off on a trip somewhere and he never came back, and we don't know what happened with him, if he's dead, if he's alive, so the woman is an aguna. But in more recent decades, what happened is people were using it as a weapon to get back at their wives who they were fighting with, they were arguing with, they didn't like, so they would withhold the get from the wife to make her suffer. So that's been a very, very big problem, and that's what we call the modern day aguna problem. They were using a get as a way of punishing the wife. Or sometimes it happens even the reverse. The wife refuses to receive a get, and that holds the husband up. Now, obviously, it's not as big a problem if the wife refuses to receive a get, because the husband is allowed to marry midoraisa. He's allowed to marry more than one wife. A woman midoraisa is not allowed to marry more than one husband. It doesn't, the kiddush is not even tovsin. But a man midoraisa is allowed to marry more than one wife. We would only need to do what's called a heter meir rabbanim to allow him to get married again if his wife refuses to receive a get, but that also comes with its own problems and its own challenges. So this is the modern day aguna problem. So a bunch of rabbanim for the past few decades were very concerned about this and tried to come up with ways to take care of these situations. So first, I'll just point out a few of the ways that they came up with that don't really fully work. There was a suggestion made that maybe just have every chassan and kala sign an agreement to give a get in the event that a secular divorce is granted. Whenever there's a secular divorce, then you'll have to give a get. Then you just sign on to that at the beginning. The problem with this is that it may be what we call a kinyan devarim. The Rambam, the fifth parak of Hilchos Mechira, talks about kinyan devarim, that if a person makes a kinyan on something that's not that's just an agreement to do, but it's not on any mamash, it's not on anything substantive, that such a kinyan may not be a binding kinyan. This also may be a problem of a get me'usa, of a coerced get, that the person is being coerced by the agreement that whenever a secular divorce is secured, that he has to give a get, so he's not doing it on his own free will, so that could be a problem of a coerced get. So that solution is not really a solution. Then there was a group of rabbanim that got together in 1984, and they suggested a $250 a day penalty for not giving a get. And they said, don't think that there's any problem with this. We do this all the time. We have what's called a shtar tanaim. When a couple gets married, nowadays the shtar tanaim doesn't really say this anymore, but it used to be that there were financial penalties for backing out of the shidduch. That if you were supposed to get married to a girl and you decided that you were going to back out of the shidduch, so there were financial penalties for backing out of the shidduch. And therefore, you were essentially forced to get married by that financial penalty. If you don't want to pay the fine, you're going to have to get married, right? And yet we never said that the Kiddushin is no good, that there's a problem with your Das and the Kiddushin. It was perfectly fine, it was perfectly good Kiddushin, even though there was a financial penalty. So this group of Rabbanim said that maybe you should say the same thing by a get. Give a financial penalty. If you don't give a get, you're going to have to pay $250 a day, and don't worry that you're being forced into the get. It's no different than being forced into the Kiddushin. The problem of here is the Beis Yosef and Ebenezer, Sim Kuflam Adal, quotes machlokes about whether this in fact is kosher or not. Quotes machlokes between the Ma'arik and the Rashba. The Rama paskins like that we should be machmir like the Shitas HaRashba lechatchila. This is not okay. He says at least lechatchila we should be machmir for the Shitas HaRashba. What about the Shtar Tanaim? So the Yeshuas Yaakov writes that really the Rama holds like the Ma'arik that it is okay, that it's not called that you're being forced unfairly and unrightly into the get, and that's why Shtar Tanaim is really okay, because really the Rama holds like Ma'arik. He just recommends being machmir lechatchila. So this group of rabbanim said, great. So if the Rama really holds like the Ma'arik, that it's really okay, so then it should really be okay. We should have no problem forcing a get in this situation. But the Rama recommends being machmir lechatchila. Well, this is anything but a lechatchila situation. Nebuch, there are these women that are agunos. That's not lechatchila. That's a very b'dieved, unfortunate situation. So maybe we should go with this. The problem with this solution was that it's very difficult to use shtar tanaim as a model for what we should do by get. In general, we're always more machmir by gittin than we are by kiddushin, in terms of the level of das required, in terms of who counts as a karov, as a relative, for edus. By edus haget, third cousins, we were machmir, the Shulchan Aruch quotes, third cousins shouldn't be edim on a get. But by edim kiddushin, never mentions that by edim kiddushin. The Ramah mentions there a minug for edim to do tshuva before signing as edim on a get. By edim kiddushin, the Ramah never mentions any such minug of edim doing tshuva before being edim kiddushin. A lot of people have the minug to do it anyway, but the Ramah doesn't record that minug because we're always a little more machmir by edim on a get than we are by edim kiddushin. And perhaps those chumras are because the stakes are much higher by get than they are by kiddushin. Meaning, what were to happen if the kiddushin is not really valid and she thinks she's married? So she's going to the mikveh and she's sleeping with her, with who she thinks is her husband, but it's not really her husband. She's a penuya. Okay, there's no mamzerus that's going to come out of it. There's no gilei arayos. There's not, you know, it's bad, but it's not terrible. The disaster of having a woman who thinks she's divorced and isn't really divorced, that's a much bigger problem. She's going to go get remarried to somebody else, have children, and she's nashus ish, and the children will be mamzerim. So obviously we're going to be much more machmir by a get than we'll be by kiddushin. Rav Shach, there's a whole piece in Ginas Ego, Siman Lamed Beis, we discussed last semester already, about how the das by a get needs to be a much higher level of das than you have by kiddushin anyway. So this second model of using the shtar tanoim as a way of showing how you could just make a financial penalty and solve it that way doesn't really work so well either. Third possible solution that also doesn't work so great is what they call the New York get law. The New York get law happened in two parts. In 1983, they made a law that you can't be granted a civil divorce until, the quote is, all barriers to remarriage are removed. That any barrier that's in place that would stop the person from getting remarried, other than a bad personality or something, but any barrier that's there that one party is putting in place, they all have to be removed. And what one such barrier to remarriage is not having a get. A woman can't get remarried without a get. And that's not called kfiya, because it's not called that you're forcing the person to give a get, because we're just saying we're not going to give you a civil divorce if you don't give a get. Doesn't mean that we're forcing you to give a get. You don't have to give a get. You just won't get a civil divorce either. You're just not going to get a legal divorce without giving a get. A person doesn't have a right to a civil divorce. It's something that the state grants. And if you don't want to give a get, then the state just won't grant you that privilege of the civil divorce. The problem with that solution was that it doesn't help if the husband doesn't care about getting a civil divorce. If he could care less and doesn't mind not being that he's still legally married to his wife, then it doesn't help you. And also, it matters legally, if the spouse that's listed as a defendant withholds the get, it won't help. It can only be the spouse listed as the plaintiff who withholds the get. So it depends who gets there first, who gets to file for divorce first, will make a huge difference. So in 1992, they tried to up the get law a little bit by imposing financial penalties for not giving a get. It would make it possible. The basic idea was that when considering alimony, not real financial penalties, but that the judge should take refusal for a get into consideration when deciding on alimony payments. Problem is, many poskim had a problem with that because they viewed that as a financial penalty. And as we pointed out, you can't give financial penalties for not giving a get. So that was a major machlokas in the poskim. A lot of the poskim were not at all excited about that idea of just having the judge take into account the alimony when deciding the alimony, and they thought that law should be repealed, and it's a very bad law. So what solution did we come up with that does work? So I say we, it's not we, it's Rabbi Willig and Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg and Rav Vadi Yosef signed on to it, and Rav Asher Weiss and many, many great Rabbanim. They came up with something called a two-pronged attack. Number one is a binding arbitration agreement, where you agree, you sign before you married, that you agree that should there be any dispute about money and about a get and about working things out, that you're going to go under the jurisdiction of a specific Beis Din, that you choose to go to Beis Din X. And it doesn't involve any forcing to actually give a get, just to show up to Beis Din. You got to show up to Beis Din and you have to listen to the Beis Din. Rav Moshe, Nechuvin, Ebenezer, Chelik Dalet, Simon Kuf Zayin seems to be completely okay with this. And then the civil court will force you to honor the arbitration agreement that you signed, that you have to listen to the Beis Din. So if Beis Din tells you that you have to do something, you got to do it. But that's part one of it. Part two, and now it's all in the same document, it was originally in two separate documents, is based on a sheet of the Nesivos in Torah's Gittin, Simen Kuf Lamed Daled, quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, Simen Kuf Lamed Daled, Sivkat Tes, is that normally in a marriage, the husband has a right to his wife's Maisei Yadayim. His wife works for a living, makes some money, the husband gets that money, and in return, the husband gives mizonos, the husband supports the wife. So what we arrange is that the husband waives his rights to Maisi Yadayim, but still agrees to continue to pay the mezonos so long as they're still married. Meaning, it's not so long as still married means so long as he hasn't given a get. He still pays her mezonos. He still has to support her. Why does he have to support her? Because she's his wife. So he has an obligation to support her. Not because he's not giving a get. There's nothing to do with not giving it. It's just the fact that she's his wife. Once he gives a get, she won't be his wife anymore, and then he won't have to give mezonos. And the only thing that this modifies a little bit is that he waives the rights of the Ma'aseh Yadayim, and we put a number to the mezonos. Instead of just saying, you know, when you live in the same house and you're supporting your wife, so she takes some food from the pantry, you take some food from the pantry, you don't have to make cheshbonos. But you're not living in the same house, so it makes sense to put a number of how much money it's going to cost to support her. So the number they gave is $100 a day. In certain communities where cost of living is more expensive, it would be $150 a day. Whatever it costs for a person, for a normal person to live regularly. And that's the penalty. It's not a financial penalty. It's just that he has to continue to pay for her mezonos until he gives again, until they're divorced, so long as they're still married. And that adds up. You know, $100 a day over time adds up. And that's the motivation to give again. Now, in order to avoid the problem of a wife might say, you know, I want to make some money, I'll just refuse to give a get for the next 6 months so that I'll have, 180 days times $100, and I'll keep making money. So no, in order to avoid that problem, there's a clause that ends the monetary obligation if the wife refuses to follow the psak of a beis din to receive a get. And there's the other issue is that there's the problem of asmachta. We learned Sanhedrin last year. Asmachta is, if I sign on, I'll give you $1 million if the Jets don't win the Super Bowl or whatever. No one really thinks the Jets, you know, I shouldn't say it that way, but I'll give you $1 million if this team doesn't win the Super Bowl. It's because I'm so confident that they're going to win the Super Bowl. I don't actually think that I'm never have to pay the $1 million. Maybe when the husband signs this, it's a problem of asmachta. He never actually, he's in love with this woman. He's getting married. He never thinks that he's going to end up paying this $100 a day. So it's an issue of asmachta. So in order to get around that, they added a number of words like me'achshav and beis din chashuv, which imply a certain level of seriousness and that it's for real. And Rav Asher Weiss also writes in the Tshuva that this is not a financial penalty at all, because it's just reasonable support, and there's no link between the chiyuv to support and the get. And with this, they have solved, for couples that actually sign this, they report a 100% success rate. In fact, just recently, in a secular court, they honored the halachic prenup, and they made it binding. It was respected in a secular court. Lawyers worked on this. This was a serious document that does seem to work. So why doesn't the entire world do this? Why is it that outside of, you'll excuse the term, but the YU, modern Orthodox world, nobody's doing this? Why is it that it will solve the Yaguna problem right there? We'll solve the entire thing. It's a Nebuch, all these women that are in trouble. So one reason that people don't do it is that it takes, as Rabbi Willard points out, whenever you make a change, it takes time for changes to take place and to take root and for people to accept it. And that's healthy. It's okay for it to take time. But slowly but surely, it should make enough inroads that it should, anything new should be viewed with some suspicion. But once you have so many Gedolei Yisrael signed on to something and agreeing that it's perfectly good and it's a smart thing to do, so we should continue to do it. And the other taina, which doesn't really resonate at all with me, is that people say it's so unromantic that as a couple's about to get married, you're going to make them sign a document about what happens if they get divorced. That's such an unromantic thing to ask them to sign. I don't know, people who have such a time, if they ever heard of a ksuba. We have a whole masechta about ksuvos, and it's very unromantic. It's if what happens if the husband dies, and what happens if they get divorced. None of it's romantic. It's not supposed to be romantic. That's why some people say, what do you hang your ksuba on the wall for? It's a death divorce document. Okay, so some people like to, and people make it up, and they fancy it up, but God forbid they should sign a halachic prenup. That's it's just as, the ksuba is just as unromantic because the halachic prenup. Whenever I'm a Sarei Kiddushin, and whenever I teach Chasanim, the first thing I teach them is, let's do the halachic prenup. I'm a Sarei Kiddushin, didn't ask me to do it. Good, so before you ask your Sarei Kiddushin about it, come, we'll sign it, we'll take care of it, and then the Sarei Kiddushin won't have to know anything. What he doesn't know can't hurt him. But that's it, something that every Jew should be doing. Okay.